From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in Arkansas this morning when a county clerk resigned rather than carry out her new duty of issuing marriage licenses to gay and lesbian couples. Cleburne County Clerk Dana Guffey said that her decision to quit is a moral judgment. She said she doesn't hate anybody, but she can't work for an office that recognizes same-sex marriages. Dana Guffey is not alone. Texas Governor Greg Abbott and Texas State Attorney General Ken Paxton issued opinions yesterday directing state agencies to, quote, respect and preserve Texans' religious liberties, end quote. Their comments are already being seen as an official green light for county clerks in Texas to refuse to issue marriage licenses to gay and lesbian couples. Tonight, the Monroe County Young Democrats are hosting a public forum titled Beyond Marriage Equality, What's Next for the LGBTQ Community? It's a good question, but the legal battle surrounding marriage might continue in parts of our country, as we're seeing in Arkansas and Texas. This hour, we do look ahead. Following the Supreme Court's decision on Friday, we can talk about marriage, and we'll talk about the many other issues that the LGBTQ community is looking at right now. Let me welcome our guest for the hour from the Monroe County Young Democrats. Aaron Gallant is here. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Cody Gardner is here. Cody is a community educator at the Rochester Victory Alliance. Nice to see you, Cody.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Genesis Nunley is here. Genesis is Vice President of the Transgender Alliance of Greater Rochester. Genesis, nice to have you.
I'm very happy to be here.
And Joe Malikovoy is here. Joe is an organizer with Marriage Equality USA. Joe, nice to see you.
Good to see you, too. Thanks for having us here.
All right, Joe, I'm going to start with you. I've talked to you for a long time over the year. I mean, not a long time. It feels like it's been a long
time.
It's
been...
Probably feels like a long time for
it's
you.
It's been about 15 years that my wife and I have been working for this, so... Long time.
Okay. And, you know, I talked to Scott Fearing from the Genesee Valley Gay Alliance on this program on Friday, Harry Brunson, Matt Haig, many others. Certainly it was a day of celebration. But I want to first ask you, do you wish it had not taken the Supreme Court? Do you wish that the states, state by state, like New York, that we didn't have three dozen plus states that were still resisting marriage equality? Do you wish it hadn't gone all the way to the Supreme Court? Do you wish the states could have gotten there first?
No, I think it happened exactly as it was supposed to happen. And with the Supreme Court handing down the ruling that it handed down, there's no question. I recognize that marriage licenses are issued by states and that states have their rights around marriage and issuing the licenses. But there is no reason that my wife and I in New York are protected and then we would cross a border. We're going to Alaska this summer and we're going to celebrate our marriage anniversary, our 10-year wedding anniversary. And so the thought was, well, here we are celebrating our wedding anniversary and we're going to go to a state where it's not recognized and we're legal strangers. And so when it comes to something that is about equality, about human relationships and being able to be ourselves and protected and take care of my family, I should be able to go anywhere in my country and do that. And so if it took the Supreme Court to do that, I'm glad it happened.
I understand that perspective entirely. I'm just looking at Arkansas and Texas. On this program on Friday, some of our guests were concerned that we could see a backlash. We're starting to see that already with either some heads of government or some participants in government at the county clerk levels in various states saying, not going to do it. I guess I would think that you're not surprised to see that in certain sectors of our country.
No, I'm not surprised. I also recognize that about the last count, 63% of Americans support marriage equality, which is that number has gone up exponentially. And in all the states, in the 37 states prior to the ruling where marriage was happening and granted, everywhere they found that acceptance grew after the passage of marriage equality in those states. So I think once people see that our relationships, our marriages, what we stand for isn't this big scary thing, that we're everyday people who wake up, cut the lawn, take care of our pets, take care of our families, want to protect each other, that people go, oh, it's, you know, our country's not going to fall into the abyss, and Canada hasn't fallen into the abyss in the 10 years that it's been legal there, and become more accepting. And so sometimes people have to be brought to acceptance. And I really have no, I'm encouraged by where we're going. And frankly, someone doesn't have to accept my marriage and my life. I just need to be protected. And that's what this is about. It's about families taking care of each other. And if somebody doesn't like it or doesn't agree with it, as long as you don't harm me or the people I love, then I'm sorry to hear that.
We're talking about not only the decision on Friday, but looking ahead now. So we will be talking about marriage, but also many of the other issues. And for our listeners, first and foremost, if you missed it, I'd encourage you to watch John Oliver's 16 minutes plus that he did on transgender issues. Really remarkable stuff from this past weekend that helps lay out some of the propaganda and some of the legal issues that are in play. We'll be talking about that this hour. Easy to find, but I would say after this podcast or this broadcast, go do that. That's certainly worth doing. But Joe, I'm starting with you because, again, you're an organizer with Marriage Equality USA, and this is what Scott Fearing and I talked about on Friday. Is there a concern that this makes people feel like, well, you got marriage equality, so that's it, right?
Right. There's certainly a concern about that, and all of us in Marriage Equality USA, our local organizers, everyone who has been at the forefront and behind the scenes working on this, we continue to make sure that people understand that marriage is not an endpoint; it's a waypoint. We have, even though in the states that you mentioned now marriage is legal, people can still get fired for being gay, being lesbian, being transgender. People can still lose their housing in certain places. In New York, gays and lesbians, we have protection over those things. In other states, people don't. And so marriage doesn't grant us the equality that as citizens we deserve. And so, no, this is not over. We are seeing a rise in violence against our transgender brothers and sisters, as acceptance for them is also growing, and we need to make sure that people can live their authentic lives, be the person that they were meant to be and that makes them whole and happy, and not have to live in fear. And so we have an aging population of gays and lesbians that we need to make sure are taken care of. We have youth who are still being mistreated and kicked out of their homes and being in homeless population. Is the percentage of gay and lesbian and transgender youth in the homeless population is astounding. So yes, the fear is that people say we have marriage, we'll sit on our laurels and say and be done. But those of us who have worked, even those of us who have been involved in any capacity, see that there is still a long way to go. And nobody's asking for special rights. Marriage, it's not a special right. Everyone just wants to live their whole authentic selves. And so we have to make sure that everyone can do that. And marriage protects those of us who are in a committed relationship. It protects children who have same-sex parents, but there's still a lot of people that need a lot of protections, and we're not done. We're far from done.
Do you see the picture of the 85 and the 82-year-old guy finally get married after, I think, 50 years together? That picture, if you miss that, again, that's another image that's easy to see. No matter how you have felt about all of this, I don't know how you see that picture and you don't feel good for those two gentlemen who've been together for so long. But what we are talking about, what happens next here. And Aaron Gallant, what's the goal tonight? Monroe County Young Democrats have put together this forum. What's the goal tonight?
So the goal, Evan, is to discuss the issues, some of which that Joe just touched on. The issues that still remain before the LGBT community, gender being one of them, the Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Act, how we can support brothers and sisters in other parts of the world that are still facing discrimination. You know, you look at places like Russia and Eastern Europe, where violence towards LGBT individuals is widespread, other parts of Africa, where laws have recently been passed to make it punishable by death. How can we support those individuals here in this country, and what else needs to be done to ensure dignity for everybody in the LGBTQ community?
That event tonight at 7:30.
Six o'clock to 7:30 at the Bread and Water Theater.
Aaron reads better than I do. I do need a new exam on my eyes. It's really, these glasses are so old. 6 to 7:30 tonight, open to the public.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And again, where is it tonight?
It's at the Bread and Water Theater at 172 West Main Street in downtown Rochester.
Okay, you're going to have a panel there from sort of across our community, from government and from community organizing, and some of the members here today on this panel, on this program now, and among many others. So that's tonight, 6 to 7:30, Beyond Marriage Equality. Let me ask Cody Gardner, first of all, you are a community educator at the Rochester Victory Alliance. What is the Rochester Victory Alliance?
Well, the Rochester Victory Alliance is a research unit at the University of Rochester, and we're focusing on discovering a vaccine to prevent HIV and AIDS. We do that through clinical trials that we've been doing since 1988 here locally in Rochester, and we're part of a global network. So there's research units just like here in Rochester all over the world working to find a vaccine. Because we think that a vaccine is going to be the long-term solution we need to finally end AIDS around the world.
Okay. And when you look now at the legal landscape and these kinds of issues, mm-hmm. what is top of mind for you going forward? What's next after marriage for you?
So there are so many things coming after marriage equality. What I focus on in my work is HIV and AIDS, how we still have 50,000 new HIV infections every single year in this country, and that amount has not waned since 2 decades ago. So it's still an issue. Even with education and access to condoms and things like that, we need to find new biomedical solutions. Recently, the FDA a couple years ago approved PrEP. We need to focus on new ways to reach out to youth in the LGBT community to make sure that they have the resources available to protect themselves in a way, a judgment-free way that's going to work for them. So I focus on a lot of that kind of thing. I see marriage equality as a way to make people or hopefully allow people to feel more affirmed in who they are. And I hope they can realize now that our government values them. And I think if they do realize that, they'll be more likely to want to take care of themselves and seek out ways to not only prevent HIV and STDs, but to get in healthcare so they can get their hepatitis A and B vaccines and to seek out resources. I think that's all really linked. So there's an emotional element to the passage of marriage equality, which we don't talk about a lot. We talk about the legal benefits and the safeguards that we now have. But I think psychologically and emotionally, it can be profoundly impactful on our health and our community as well.
We're going to get to some of your questions and comments via email, Twitter at Evan Dawson, or you can call the program toll-free with our panel. This hour, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Our subject this hour is Beyond Marriage Equality. The Monroe County Young Democrats have put together this forum tonight, Beyond Marriage Equality, What's Next for the LGBTQ Community. I heard from a number of folks in town and out of town this morning who are in the legal community who saw the show advertised for Beyond Marriage Equality, what comes next, and they kind of wanted to or thought perhaps the discussion would entail the impact of the Supreme Court's decision from a legal perspective, as in a does X lead to Y? That is a discussion for another day, and I think it's a fair one. I don't think it's fair to wonder if the slippery slope means that, well, now one person can marry five people and, you know, a man could marry a dog. I mean, that's just, we're in a very strange territory, and that's not where we're going. But if you want to ask on a future program, does this erode states' rights to do what they want? Does this erode federalism? Does this mean more states have to sort of conform with a standard set of laws? Yeah, we'll talk about that on a future program, and some will say yes and good, and some will say yes and not good, and some will say that's also overblown. But that's not this hour. I want to talk this hour about what is next for the LGBTQ community, and I think Genesis Nunley can help us also understand a big portion of that, which is the transgender community. Did you see John Oliver's segment from the weekend?
I literally saw it this morning.
You saw it this morning. What did you think?
Interesting, but at the same time, I am not sure that I feel comfortable having him as such an open advocate for the community that he does not represent at all.
Okay.
Yeah. But I do like that information got out there and that it was put forth in a palatable way that allows people to internalize like what progress does need to be made.
Well, and there are certain things that came from his report that, you know, I think we hear about challenges for the transgender community. But then you see some very specific things. For example, In parts of Arizona, $2,500 fine for using the wrong bathroom. They wanted to pass that law. Gainesville, Florida, wanted to pass bathroom legislation, and they put an ad out warning parents about transgender adults following children into bathrooms. And the ad has this dark image of a nice young girl on a playground, and she goes into a public bathroom, and then the screen gets dark, and this this person's looking around all grimly and then secretly follows the child into the bathroom, and it says, "This could happen." You know, confirming all of the worst stereotypes that aren't true, of course, about the transgender community.
Right. I think at least let me preface by saying the Transgender Alliance of Greater Rochester is a support group, because for us, you cannot separate the emotional from like the very visceral legal and political aspect. Because for me, or for like members within the trans community, gender, like the fact that gender has not passed, means that if I out myself, then I am simply not protected. And like, though I want to be able to do something, sometimes the only way for us to move forward is to inherently put ourselves in a form, like a very visceral danger. And I know for me, speaking personally, like I am a young trans man of color. And so like, I am all for like marriage, and I'm really, I've heard like what that implies, but this does not address like some very scary visceral needs for me and many members within my community. And even with regards to looking at marriage, okay, people can get married. However, second apparent adoption and surrogacy are still issues that might prevent these couples from having children or from having like equal rights to like the children of their partners.
Okay, and so, you know, For those of us who are just sort of familiar, I think this country's familiarization with the trans community, I think the last 12 to 18 months has been pretty remarkable. And granted, I'm not a trans adult. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree that there have been fantastic strides made for the image of trans individuals like within the media, but at the same time, these are still largely exceptions. Like with regards to Caitlyn Jenner, she's a trans woman, but she is also a white, wealthy Republican.
Right.
And just like, and I love both like Laverne Cox and Janet Mock, for example, but they are not the archetype of what it means to be trans, because there is no archetype. And I think like an issue that I find within sometimes even spaces that are geared towards the LGBTQQIAA community is there, or the alphabet soup affectionately, there are places where people try to solidify a definition of what it means to be trans,
right,
and that simply will not happen. And so, like, to use Caitlyn Jenner and Laverne Cox as that, like, the paradigms of what it means actually ignores, like, the issues that other trans individuals have that might not have access to what they have.
Joe?
I respectfully want to add that when I look at what we've done with marriage and what we've done with the gay and lesbian community, our biggest advocates and allies were the allies. And when allies got closer to accepting, and when they came on board with our desire to legalize marriage, is when people started listening. And when I think back to when I was first coming out and Ellen was first coming out, and the images, and you had what was that show?
Will and Grace?
Will and Grace. Okay, thank you. Those were not archetypes. Those were not those. There was a lot of stereotypes in there. There were a lot of things. You look at Ellen; she was the rich white woman who, you know, was already successful. And you had Will and Grace that were these, you know, upper New York people who, and they weren't the archetype. However, it starts conversation and it moves us forward. And it, even if it opens up conversation for me to say to someone, that's not what it looks like. I think the path, if we look at the arc of equality and the paths that in the past, whatever plight it's taken for social justice, whatever path it's taken, has always been much longer than the road that we were. Marriage happened pretty quickly. I mean, for us, it feels like forever. Like I said, my my wife and I have been working towards this for the last 15 years. That seems like forever. But in the grand scheme of history, it actually was accelerated. And I think a lot of that was due to social media, the immediacy of people being able to get information, popular culture. And while we might not like the images that they put out there, it certainly gives us a platform to be able to discuss why we don't like those images like you're doing right now. So I'm not disagreeing with you, but what I'm saying is I think that we can't underestimate the power of the message that that you were discussing.
And John Oliver.
John Oliver. Part, yeah. And you and being able to say it's really important to have allies starting to speak out.
Yeah, I was recently talking with a friend of mine, and we were talking about how, especially as members of the trans community, we sometimes feel difficult when what we are offered is scraps. But as I like to argue, I still have to eat. Like, so granted, some soundbite might be not the best thing that I wanted to see. I recognize that that brings that issue to someone's face. Someone is now looking at it. Someone is talking about it, and it has to be recognized.
I think we will have really arrived with sort of embracing and however term you want to use it, normalizing respectful relations with the trans community, when I can comfortably say Caitlyn Jenner is so annoying and has nothing to do with her gender expression. I don't like watching the Kardashians. Caitlyn Jenner's annoying not because of gender. she's fabulously interesting. I think courageous in many ways when it comes to gender, but I agree with Jenison that it's got to be easier for Caitlyn Jenner than it would be for a lot of people, and I find the whole family kind of annoying, but it has nothing to do with gender.
Well, I think of like ways to positively just include being trans into the conversation is to just, when you meet someone, ask what their pronouns are. Like, what pronouns do I use with you? Because that is something that happens within the trans community, but not necessarily within the community at large. Which like takes apart like that being an exception, and also to use what are your pronouns versus preferred pronouns, because why are my pronouns preferred and yours are completely allowed?
And by the way, I think a natural progression in our conversation about the legal challenges are some of the etiquette parts of the conversation that we're having right now. But back to some of the legal questions, again, I should have known. I should have probably logically assumed. But I didn't think about American soldiers being discharged for being trans. Remarkable genesis, but here we are, right?
No, that's the thing. And I think there is also, at least within the trans community, there is there's sometimes a tendency, and this happens in the queer community at large, to try to sequester, but it's coming from a place of self-protection, of the fact that there are not so many legal protections, let alone community protections in some sense, which is why I will meet people who will like vilify the person who got discharged from the army, but at the same time, you cannot fault people for having to survive within a system that inherently disenfranchises them. Which is why, like, taking certain vehicles towards recognition, like whether it be Oliver's interview or it be like an article in the newspaper, are completely understandable to me, but still difficult to process because at the same time, I feel like we want more.
Well, let's do this. Let's start to answer some of the questions that have come in. We've got some questions about law, questions about one of our listeners said you've mentioned gender or agenda, a legislative agenda, but haven't mentioned what's in it. I apologize for that. That's kind of a shorthand. That's my fault because I get so used to covering it. So after this short break, let's come back. We'll talk about agenda, what it is. We'll talk about we'll answer some of the other questions that have come in. As well as we talk to our panel about what comes next after marriage equality. Aaron Gallant with Monroe County Young Dems is here. They've organized tonight's forum from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Bread and Water Theater. That's on West Main Street in Rochester and open to the public. And here in studio for the hour, you've been hearing from Genesis Nunley, who's the Vice President of the Transgender Alliance of Greater Rochester, Joe Malik-Voigt, an organizer with Marriage Equality USA, Cody Gardner, community educator at Rochester Victory Alliance. Some of your questions answered after this break on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, Geneva, New York just won the distinction of being an All-America city. No, not All-American, All-America city. What does that mean? How did they win that distinction? And how has Geneva so successfully been able to revitalize itself? What are all the factors that have gone into that? We'll talk about the Renaissance of Geneva next hour on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from City Blue Imaging, a commercial printer based in downtown Rochester for more than 85 years, specializing in digital color printing, trade show, and special event printing. CityBlueImaging.com.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and answering Mary's question, Mary writes in and says, you've mentioned gender or genda as a legislative agenda, but you haven't told us what is in it. I apologize, Mary. It's a good point. Who wants to start?
I'll answer that. And in the interest of full disclosure, in addition to my role as board member in the Young Democrats, I also, my full-time job, I work for Assemblymember Harry Bronson. So the answer to that question, it's GENDA stands for the Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Act. It's a piece of state legislation. To summarize, it would outlaw discrimination against individuals in the sectors of housing, employment, public accommodations, in terms of how they identify or express their gender. It was inspired in part by the Sexual Orientation Non-Discrimination Act, which has been law of the land here in New York for some years now, and it would extend those discrimination protections for transgender individuals.
Genesis, how common is that kind of discrimination?
I cannot. That is not a black and white response or black and white answer, because it is couched in so many other forms of discrimination that can be said. Like, you can simply say that a haircut doesn't go with what the company policy has. Like, one of my friends who is a trans woman wanted to wear earrings, and all of a sudden her boss came to her with new guidelines that said women couldn't wear watches and, like, men couldn't wear earrings. And so, like, that is a very different, though, than...
And it's a trans woman.
Yeah, like, yeah, so, like, and so, but that wasn't specifically saying that, like, I am being prejudiced against you for your gender identity or expression, but it is doing so in the way that it was implemented. So it's difficult to even gauge how often this happens, because there are so many ways, both, that it actually does occur.
Okay, so a couple of things here. Do you think GENDA, as written, as you understand it, would it address these issues? Would there always be people trying to discriminate, get around the law in various ways? And would GENDA go a good ways towards remedying some of that?
I think GENDA would go a very long way in actually remedying some of that. Well, also, it affects more than just members of the trans community, because there is a protection for gender expression. So if your gender expression does not fall along the quote-unquote, like, binary lines of a man and woman in society, then you are also helped by GENDA. Let's say if someone is, like, if I decided to carry, like, a purse one day, like, and my employer is reading me as a man, then, like, that is, he could specifically... I don't have any protection against that if he says something. But of course, people are always going to find ways to get around certain things. Like, for instance, I've heard, like, people with interesting hair colors, like, saying that that is not okay, that that is not professional. And so, like, right, yeah.
I have purple hair. I'm just putting it there.
Yeah, it's good to me.
Yeah, and I have, like, shaved head, dreadlocks, part dyed blonde, and I have actually been told by some employers that my hair is not professional. And I'm like, well, what does that imply? Because this is actually the natural hair that grows out of my head. Like, but yeah, so people will find ways
to... natural hair is not professional?
Yeah, just like, yeah, exactly, which is, like, even going to the things with, like, gender, like, who is to say, like, that this person's expression is anything that they should be discriminated against?
Okay.
Granted, people are still going to be who they are. But,
all right,
yeah.
So what Genesis is saying is, you're not going to fix everything. Gender could help, and yet we just wrapped up a legislative session, Aaron, and what happened?
So it's gender has passed the Assembly, I think, each legislative session for the last 4 or 5 years at least. The Senate... with a Republican majority, a Republican coalition majority, has declined to take up the legislation. The governor has come out and expressed his support of it, but the state Senate is what's holding it up at
this
point.
All right, so the Assembly has passed it. The governor would sign it. Mm-hmm. The Senate, it's not that they voted it down. They simply haven't even moved it. Is that correct?
Yes, correct. It has not been considered by the Senate.
All right, and in your work in various legislative chambers, have you ascertained a reason why they won't move it at all, even for a vote?
Well, I think, you know, you have a lot of state senators, especially the state senators in upstate New York and those on Long Island, that that feel that they are the last bastion against changing a community, changing society, a more open and accepting society. Those individuals who have come out against the legislation tend to be more, you know, what you would consider socially conservative, religiously inspired groups. And some of the reasoning that they've given has been along the lines that you mentioned, individuals having concerns about, you know, if you were born a male but you identify as female, should you be allowed to use the female restroom? So those are, you know, concerns that have been raised against the bill. And I think, you know, overall there's just there's intransigence and there's ongoing opposition to expanded protections for individuals who identify as transgender.
The notion of all these bathroom bills around the country, it's just bizarre to me. As if transgender has anything to do, look, here's Jake right into the program. Isn't enforcing bathroom gender clearly unconstitutional discrimination based on sex?
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to say that it has never been called the bathroom bill. Like, there's never been anything within gender. Like, that
No. I'm saying apart from gender, I'm saying what Florida, what Arizona are doing, all these bizarre bills in which they're trying to force a trans male to use this bathroom, not this bathroom, because we don't accept the transgender community, and we're going to fine you. You know, Arizona's $2,500 fine. Gainesville, Florida, putting ads out implying that the trans community is just about, it's all about trying to follow kids into bathrooms to abuse them. I mean, you're talking about you couldn't come up with really a more hurtful stereotype.
Well, it's fear-mongering is what it is. I mean, it's out there to put ideas. It was things that were said about, and since the discussion is beyond marriage equality, these similar arguments were used against LGBT, or, well, gays, same-sex marriages, that the children were going to be in abusive families and that we're all pedophiles. And I mean, there were so many things that were misinformation, fear-mongering. And it's really disgusting that someone would make up, people would make up these types of lies just to get their agenda forward. It's unconscionable as far as I'm concerned. And so we have people who are fearing people who are different rather than us fearing the people who are creating the fear. I mean, this is these bills and laws in the other states, I don't think people genuinely believe that a trans person or somebody is going to go into a bathroom and hurt someone. I think they genuinely are trying to create fear so that they get their way in their political platform. And it is really irresponsible. And it angers me so much because we saw this throughout history when interracial marriage was at question. There were so many of the same arguments used then. It's age-old fear-mongering. And we need to stand up and speak against it.
Genesis?
I actually think, like, for the same reason that, like, marriage seemed to move so quickly is the same reason that this, like, blatant trans misogyny and transphobia is also able to spread. Because I can, honestly speaking for myself, like, marriage in New York was 2009, right? Like, so in my lifetime, marriage has never been a question. But I think it's because I'm ramped forward so quickly. But all of a sudden, I also saw, like, a bunch of trans misogyny just coming out because people weren't just, like, whispering in corners. They're putting it in an ad. They're putting it in, like, the newspaper. They're putting it in, like, the public sphere. And even, like, to bring it back to gender, the difficulty about that is there's still no real protection in the way for trans individuals to say, hey, this is messed up. And because, like, there is also, like, this weird underlying pressure that in order for me or individuals to know that it's messed up, that I might have to out myself. And I am not safe if I do so, as are many other members of my community, the LGBT, the G, the B, and the T, are also unsafe for similar reasons, simply because of this blatant fear-mongering.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to follow up on what Genesis said, you know, and also what Joe touched on. This bill is really about allowing people to live their lives, people like Genesis. It's people who are opposed to this bill will get hung up on public accommodations, particularly the bathroom issue. But, you know, it's so much more than that. It's about housing. It's about people not being evicted from their apartment because their landlord doesn't approve of the gender that they express or that they identify with. It's about them not being fired from their job because their employer feels discriminatory toward them. It really is a broad and encompassing piece of legislation, and it's a policy that needs to be implemented.
It recalls for me Well, first of all, the term of the legislation or this package is called GENDA. And the real agenda for the trans community and for the gay community is simply equality and opportunity. Whereas 10 years ago, long before marriage equality was sort of more normalized, I remember when David Rakoff, one of my favorite writers, was on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And David Rakoff has since passed away. I thought best writer of our generation. And David was gay and wrote a series of essays for a book, and he was telling Jon Stewart about it. And he said he was interviewing Phil Knight, who was the head of I can't remember the name of the foundation. As David Rakoff would say, it was probably like the Basket of Puppies Foundation, you know, but, you know, it's some flowery name. But they were against gay rights. And David Rakoff interviewed Phil Knight, and Phil Knight told him that he was worried about the gay agenda. And David Rakoff said, oh, that's funny. You think like we have like an actual evil agenda, like number one, find children. Number two, you know, abuse them. It's like, it's amazing that people thought, you know, for years, people spoke about the gay agenda in really dark terms. And now we're starting to hear, right, the trans misogyny in that same ugly way when we see it in an ad in Gainesville and things like that. It's pretty remarkable.
You know, it interests me when they talk about the gay agenda, because having been a community organizer for as long as I have, we're not that easy to get on the same page.
No.
So, you know, it's kind of like what they say, like herding cats. I wish we were able to do that easier. So, but I think, you know, if I think back to Sonda, when Sonda was passed, shortly before Sonda was passed, I found myself in a situation where an employer felt it was okay to make my life difficult because of my sexual orientation. And it was very clear to me that that was the reason, because before this person found out about it, I was the best person they had hired in years. And then after they found out I was gay, suddenly I could do no right. And so I have seen that, months after that situation happened to me is when Sonda was passed. Fast forward 15 years later, and people wouldn't think of it. I mean, it just would absolutely appall someone to think that someone would even question my ability as an educator because of my sexual orientation. And I think there is this escalation and ramping up of opposition and before something happens. And I can see, and I recently heard just a few weeks ago about a situation where a person that I know who is transgender was put in a similar situation that I was put in, that it wasn't called being fired because of your trans or gay in my case, but it was certainly a matter of break it down, and that's what it was. And then once Sonda passed, once GENDA passes, it takes a while to get people on board with it and to understand it, but it's the beginning, it's the impetus, it's the protections. And it goes back full circle to what you said in the beginning and what you asked me, Evan, about was I disappointed that it had to go through the Supreme Court and it didn't happen state by state? Would I love for there to be the Supreme Court to say that ENDA, which is the national form of GENDA, is the law of the land? Would I be upset about that? Absolutely not, because I don't want, in the city of Rochester and in Brighton, locally, are the two municipalities where transgender people are protected in housing and employment. I don't want them to have to worry when they step outside of the border of those municipalities. I want people to be able to live their lives throughout our country, and we need to do this. We have to do this. It's a matter of life and death for many people.
Jane writes to the program, says, please ask, can a Catholic clerk refuse to file divorce decrees? I have no idea.
I get where she's coming from with that. And in Catholicism, divorce is unacceptable. And so if you are a clerk who is Catholic and in Catholic faith, divorce is not allowed, then are you able to say, I'm not going to file that decree because it's against my religious conviction? I think that's where she's coming from with it, is to equate that. And interestingly, that's one of the things I've said to people very often when we talk about marriage is, well, what if my church doesn't want to marry two women or two men? Well, I frequently go back to the Catholic Church has the right to refuse marrying someone who was previously married and divorced. No one's going to force someone to do that. Can a clerk right now say, I'm not going to file a divorce paper because it's against my religion? Well, then maybe that's not. I mean, if filing divorce papers is part of your job description, then you should be doing your job.
Right, if that's the law of the land.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
There are other jobs you could probably get.
I hesitate to say that, but yes. Yes, there are. There are.
You never
like,
know.
Maybe
you could.
Being in the marriage license division. Ask for a transfer. I don't know.
I think that's probably fair. Pete wanted to know about adoption, and this has come up a couple of times since Friday, since the Supreme Court's decision on same-sex marriage. Wants to know if this decision changes adoption law in any way and allows for same-sex couples to more freely and easily adopt. And the answer we had on Friday was, we don't know. I don't know the answer. Anybody have anything?
I think the answer is that it doesn't affect adoption at all. But what it will do is, I think, empower people to go to court for adoption. And then we'll see, hopefully, later on, a lot of people bring in court cases to make that the law of the land, where we will find that gay people can adopt just like straight people.
Okay.
In every state. I mean, there are some states now where we can. But.
That makes sense to the panel here? Yeah, I think even like marriage, we are seeing this morning in Texas and Arkansas, there's a lot that we don't know about how certain parts of government will react to what happened on Friday, mm-hmm. and what comes out of that going forward. But,
well, it certainly opens up a lot of questions, not only mm-hmm. adoption, but surrogacy. That's something else that we're looking at in New York State specifically, where surrogacy is not legal. And when we live in a state where women are allowed to make choices about their reproductive futures, if they choose to carry a child for two gay men or an infertile couple or whatever, then should that person be able to do that? And so that is an example of where it opens up the discussion in other areas that don't necessarily only affect same-sex couples. As infertile couples or couples who choose to have a child differently would like to employ a surrogate, they can't do that in New York State. And again, these are discussions that get opened and that we have now a case to test it against and to work with it and to figure out, well, if we are a recognized married couple, then should these other opportunities be available to us?
Stephen writes and says, I've tried to tell my father that this is not about hurting Christian businesses. He won't listen. All right, panel. Genesis, you had a visceral reaction to that comment.
I'm not sure how to respond to that. Because I don't know how what he is really saying when he says that, but it's not. I'm not sure. And also that sort of gets rid of the fact that there are many, many, many members of the LGBTQ community that are Christian. So to say that it hurts Christian businesses, so they're hurting their own businesses. They're hurting their own communities, and they are not. This is simply a community that they are a part of.
And it cuts both ways, Evan. Yeah. I would defend any religious organization, a conservative religious organization, or a couple, a straight couple, let's say, going into a gay bakery and a gay owner refuses to make them a cake. I would defend the right of that couple against that business owner the same way I would if it were the reverse. So it really does cut both ways.
I think a part of mine actually is that in a way, I think it doesn't, because oppression does not work both ways. For the oppressed group to deny something of the one who, they are oppressing is different for me than the flip side, if that makes any sense. If the gay baker said no, that's coming from a place of I've been told no by you so many times.
They still can't do it.
No, they can't do it. I know they can't. I'm not defending that, but I think it's a really really important to remember that oppression does not go both ways.
I would just put it this way: when we talk about racism, for example, keep in mind that there is prejudice in the hearts of probably all human beings, no matter your race, your background, etc. But racism is being able to exercise prejudice to wield power. And the oppressed people, does that make
yes,
sense?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Same
yeah.
kind of thing when it comes to discrimination. Gay people are rarely discriminating against straight people. I think what Aaron seems to be saying is that the law would protect anybody from being discriminated yeah. against no matter what, but whether it's their religion, their sexuality, their ethnicity, etc. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And we look back with horror on not just places in the South, but of course across the country, where business owners would refuse service to individuals of a different race, black, Hispanic, what have you. And I think, 20 or 30 years from now, we'll look back again and say, gosh, what were these people thinking?
Well, to Stephen's the one who wrote us and said, I've tried to tell my father this is not about hurting Christian businesses. He won't listen. I've heard Christian commentators over the last 3 or 4 days. Franklin Graham, for example. I listened to him for about half an hour the other day. And he thinks that we are not far away from religion itself being legislated. And I said, first of all, there are thousands of religions that have come up in humankind over the eons. And some of them call for actually murdering people who are different. And if that's the case with your religion, you're darn right it's going to be legislated against. So, yes, there are judgments that a society makes about what is acceptable and what is not. And if your religion would like to do things to hurt other people, you can expect it to be legislated against. That's all I would say. I don't think anybody wants to tell someone you cannot be a Christian, you can't worship here. But I find that to be a bit of a red herring. Anyway, go ahead, Joe.
Some people's faith and Christianity calls them to love others and to be open and accepting of others and to not necessarily agree with everything that everyone does, but to treat them with respect. And for the Christians in my life that I know who love and accept me and respect me, it is a matter of recognizing their faith to allow them. There are many Christians I know who believe that accepting a trans person for who they are, for accepting a gay couple for who they are and allowing them to get married is a part of their faith. And so what this allows is if you are someone who you feel compelled by your religion not to accept and not to be accepting and understanding and open to people with lifestyles that are different than yours, you can still do that. If you are someone whose religion and faith draws you to be open and accepting and loving of people whose lifestyles are different than yours, you can still do that. It is respecting Christianity in whatever form it takes, because we know there's not just one way to be a Christian. There's not just one way. And so is this about breaking down Christianity? There is no reason anyone would want that. We want people to, the whole idea behind our movement, whether it's about youth, LGBT, everybody in the community, is all about allowing people to live their authentic whole lives. That's what we desire, is to let people live their lives the way that they know is right for them. And if Christianity is what's right for someone, no one wants to take that away from someone. No one wants to take that away from someone. We just want us all to allow each other to be on this path, to move forward, and to do so in a way that makes us healthy and whole, because as a community, it makes all of us healthy and whole.
And the last point as we begin to wrap up here, I would say to that, Joe, you said letting us live the life that we know is right for us.
Yes.
There are some Christian leaders who've said that's where they would say yes, but not if it's hurtful to others, and they have kind of trotted out this line about protecting kids.
I think
they're not going to believe this, but they agree with you on that. And I think we've gotten to the point now where we can sort of move past the notion that it is automatically injurious to children growing up in a gay or trans, et cetera, household. Growing up in all kinds of households, but it is not.
All studies show that children who are raised in same-sex households, that they are just as healthy and happy as other children, with the exception that they end up being a little bit more open-minded. And the notion that what I am saying is about anyone who cannot be a consenting adult is wrong. When I say these things, it's always about consenting adults knowing what their future and their happiness is.
Sure, and I would just say, going forward, when there are more legal challenges, whether it's gender, whether it's about adoption, whether it's about resources and services, HIV, AIDS, helping people in different sectors of the community, you will occasionally hear that. Mm-hmm. And the good news is we've had enough time to actually start to really study this, as you say. Mm-hmm. And I hope that we can all have a respectful dialogue going forward. It's been a great panel this hour. So, Aaron Gallant, one more time, the details tonight. What's going on tonight?
Yep. So it's a panel discussion, Beyond Marriage Equality, What Comes Next for the LGBTQ Community. It's from 6 to 7:30 at this evening at Bread and Water Theater, 172 West Main Street, downtown Rochester.
Okay.
Open and free to the public.
Open and free to the public. Was this something that you had planned? I guess we knew that there would be some decision one way or another.
Yeah, we planned it to work out this way in terms of timing. We anticipated actually that the decision from the Supreme Court would come yesterday, not on Friday.
Right.
But be that as it may, we wanted to have this discussion because we decided one way or another, whatever the Supreme Court rules, marriage equality, at least, is the law of the land here in New York, and we can't be complacent.
Thanks very much, Aaron Gallant with Monroe County Young Democrats, and respect your time. I know it's a busy day. Good luck tonight, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cody Gardner is here. Cody with the day. Cody is going to take my sheet home, and he's going to send me an email, and he's going to put every R into a D on my keyboard. Cody Gardner is a community educator at the Rochester Victory Alliance. Thank you, Cody.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Nice talking to you this hour. Genesis Nunley, the Vice President of the Transgender Alliance of Greater Rochester. Genesis, thank you.
Thank you.
And let's continue the conversation. I hope Joe Malikovoit, an organizer with Marriage Equality USA. Nice to see you, Joe.
Always a pleasure, Evan.
Short break, and much more with you next hour on Connections.